a real taste for truth until and unless we find in our hearts a real taste for the truth, we're not safe. First, on the surface, spiritual life begins with Shraddha, faith, and underneath with Sukriti, a special merit. Next is Sadhu Sangha, or the company of the saints. Within that is our surrender to Guru. Then bhajan begins. So this process is being analytically described. First, we come with some faith. Some people say that faith is blind, but that may be tested. If we come to a proper agent, if we come to a proper association due to our faith, then the faith wasn't blind. It took us somewhere. It guided us somewhere. If we have faith, we may call it faith, Shraddha, but it takes us to some cheating place, to some false sangha, where everyone is thinking, I am God, you are God, like that, then that was some blind faith, because it did not take us to where, to the land of faith. It did not take us in any proper direction, so that was blind faith. So the slight difference between this blind faith, which may lead us to a cheating sangha, a cheating guru, and so forth. Just like the blind man may walk off a cliff while walking. He may wander and fall off a cliff and die. So blind faith may take us in any uncertain place. But if it is not blind faith, then it will take us to the proper association, proper agent. So the slight difference there is beneath the faith there's Sukriti, merit, unseen merit. We may call that fortune. We may have a good fortune. We may have not a good fortune. We may have a bad fortune. This Sukriti we will gather from many lifetimes. Sukriti means good work. By doing various types of good works, we will develop some Sukriti. Even feeding the poor, helping an aged person across the street, or doing any good work like that, digging a well, repairing a road, or something like that. That is also a type of Sukriti. That is very less, but nonetheless, that will also give fruit in that proper direction. But the better type of Sukriti is called Agyata Sukriti. That even without our knowledge, we do something to help the devotees of the Supreme Lord. Or we do something in relation directly to the Supreme Lord. Say there are the Sankirtan van, the devotees. Sankirtan vehicle, preaching vehicle, has a flat tire on the road. So a good Samaritan stops to help and help the devotees change the tire. He may have that as his moral standard, and then if he sees anybody in distress on the highway, he stops and helps. So helping anybody, he gets some Sukriti. But when he stops to help the devotees, even he does not know they're devotees, but because they are fully engaged in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, and he helps them, that Sukriti then is called Agyata Sukriti. That is a special type of Sukriti, and it is in direct relation to divinity. And that will bring to him much good. Even a little Agyata Sukriti in a previous life or in somewhere in this life will bring us very soon to the proper line of the representation of the Supreme Lord. So then the next thing which is developed or unfolding is surrender. Surrender is next. Our faith will guide us in the proper way, and then we begin the life of surrender. Saranagati. Saranagati in the very beginning. There must be surrender. Now, how do you come to the point of surrender. You understand the idea of surrender. If there is a war and there is surrender, what do?
You give up.
You give up. You cannot any longer struggle against the forces. You face hopelessness. You face a type of defeat. You cannot anymore maintain your position. So in this world, we are maintaining what? Spiritual position?
No.
We are maintaining a material position. Life after life, simply we are maintaining a material position. So surrender means we will feel a state of hopelessness. In that hopelessness, we have no alternative but to give up and surrender to Krishna. If you enter on the path of devotional service, but you never come to feeling hopeless, then how you surrender? It is not an intellectual exercise. It is not something that you do simply by practice. It is a condition of your heart. It is not so much your arm and leg and mind. Even offering your wealth, even offering your talent, even offering your knowledge, this may not be surrender. This may be also patronizing to one's own self. But when we are hopeless and we feel that we cannot, when we are hopeless, then we can surrender. And what is it that we surrender? Again, it's not our wealth, it's not our talent, it's not our intelligence, or any ability that we have. It is simply ourself. We surrender our heart. When the heart goes, the mind follows. Where the mind goes, the arm, leg follows. And thus wealth, intelligence, talent, everything that we have, it also goes to Krishna. But if in the forefront, we haven't given ourselves self-surrender, that is called saranagati, prapanam jivanamrita, life nectar of surrendered soul. If we haven't given the very self of our existence, in the front to Krishna, then everything that's coming behind may not be actually for Krishna. There is a propensity in this world that is called cheating propensity. We see in the market, you see in the business, you see in politics, it is daily cheating going on. So to say that this world is a cheating world, cheaters in the cheated, it is not an inaccurate statement. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say, this world is cheaters and cheating. So generally, when we hear that, we look about and we see all those cheaters. They are cheating us, you see. And that may be true. They may be trying to cheat us, you see. So we will try to take a measure of precaution. However, there is one cheater. He is most difficult to trace out. And that cheater is cheating us more than the collective energy of all others. Who is that? Yourself. We are our own biggest cheater. We are our own greatest self-deceiver. We want the world to be honest and straightforward with us. But in the last issue, we are not honest and straightforward with ourselves. So, there is no question of one becoming surrendered unless one can recognize the self-deception within. Self-deception, cheating one's own self. Don't worry about how others are cheating you. This all stems from we are cheating ourselves. We are not truthful within our own self. So this is a big hurdle to cross. Crossing this hurdle, one is then firmly situated on the path of self-realization, going back to home, back to God. Crossing this hurdle. But it is a big hurdle to cross, self-deception. Srila Sridhar Maharaj many times told, you should analyze why you came to this path. Why you came here. With what purpose in mind did you enter in Krishna consciousness? At that time, you left so many things behind. Many people walked away from university education. They were within, in some cases, a short time, 6 months or something like that, to take a particular degree. Even PhD degree, high degree of honor. Many devotees they found in Krishna consciousness something so sublime, something so rewarding, something so attractive and so enticing, they left that opportunity of a great career. They left the military opportunity, even at the expense of facing imprisonment. They left their military obligation to run to Krishna. For that you can go to jail. Yet all over the world, devotees did that, particularly Achyutananda. He ran from that. He ran to India and stayed, avoiding that military obligation. One devotee, Achyutananda, gone. Later he was given amnesty, he went back. But wealth. Some devotees were offered great wealth by their family. They were threatened. If you go in the direction of Krishna consciousness, you're cut from the inheritance. You won't get house. We won't leave you a dime. What to do? They told them, I will die a beggar. And they went to Krishna, leaving great wealth behind. In one particular case, one devotee, his father offered him $2 million cash in a box, in a suitcase. He came to the temple with it in his hand. He talked to his son, who was a brahmachari. Simply leave this temple and come out. This is just the beginning. This is just your party money. Leave this place. No, I cannot leave Krishna. He stayed. He left that money behind. So, there are many, many examples. Of course, some of us had not very little to leave behind except the life of suffering and poverty anyway. Krishna consciousness was an upgrade. Still, in that life of poverty, they say every pauper is proud of his penny. Even the beggar likes his harmonica. He's attached to something. But we leave those attachments. The yogi's attached to his yoga practice. The meditation is attached to his meditation. All these things. We're attached to a guitar, a harmonium, something. Harmonica. Drums, something like that. And we were told, no, 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 no. We don't play those things in the temple. We are prepared to leave all these things of wealth, value, and significance in our life. For what? For Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. So we have a glimpse of a conception, and it is so superior to everything else, we are ready to leave that. But then, Guru Sri Ramar said, don't become a self-deceiver that after some time you retreat on the path. In America, we have this saying, middle-class America. Sometimes we talk about it, we make jokes about it. Many devotees then fly to become successful middle-class Americans. And in the estimation of some, they will praise, oh, you have everything. You have a home in the country. You have succeeded. You're in the middle-class America. But then the devotee will say, what is the value of that middle class? Without sadhu sangha, without the association of devotees, it is all an empty husk. Empty husk. Empty rice husk. You cannot survive simply on social status, middle class status, upper class status. So, embarking on the path, we should not then fall again prey to self-deception and become again a self-deceiver. And then again, in some way, lie and cheat ourselves. So that is a very subtle thing. How to write all that out, explain what is that self-deception. But it begins with the feeling that you are strong. It begins with the feeling that you don't need anybody. It begins with the feeling that you're all right. Everything is fine. You don't need others. This is all self-deception. Why? Because the soul itself is only a particle of consciousness, and it is dependent from its very beginning to be connected with the conscious world. It is not a loner. It is a groupie. The soul is a groupie, not a loner. He does not stand alone. He stands with many, many souls. We stand to serve Krishna together, not alone. That is why ashram means come and live together to serve Krishna. Here you can actually serve Krishna. Some people will retreat to home, to far away, to serve Krishna. There you won't serve Krishna. There you're living a life of self-deception, thinking you're serving Krishna. That will not be so acceptable. Living in the group means there's always surrender. It is there all the time. You're needed to do offering. You're needed. You are needed. You are needed. Huh? But we feel that is exploitation. That is not correct. That is our fortune. We are being given the opportunity to come forth and serve and to sacrifice. But when we retreat to alone, even if you are a sannyasi, you just retreat to live in some cave and just go on with 64 rounds of japa every day, in the opinion of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you are a self-deceiver. You are deceiving first yourself, and then you are deceiving others, making a show of this greatness. You come out from your cave of 64 rounds. You come to the mutt life. You come to the ashram life. The active life of serving Krishna with many and spreading that good word to others, doing great benefit to others by spreading the holy word. Then you are avoiding this self-deception. So the whole ashram life is to help us over this massive hurdle of self-deception, which also means selfishness. We think that by accumulation for ourselves, we will be happy. But this is another self-imposed lie. You are not happy by consumption. The living being is only happy by giving. He is not happy by consuming. That is his illusion. That is his maya. Krishna is a consumer. There is only one consumer. That is Krishna. All others are particles of consumption. They are to be eaten by Krishna. They are to be devoured by Krishna. They are to be utilized by Krishna. They are for his pleasure. You may think of the living being, the soul is just like a rasgulla. Eaten by Krishna. You will get good taste from that soul. But you are not for eating many other rasgulas. You are not for enjoying other living entities. That is called illusion. That is called mind. So we have to recognize what we are. We are units of service. We are units of necessity. And in this world, we must feel hopeless. Let us say, I gave this example the other day. We want to perform some service. We want to make a new palki. So we assess what can we afford from our budget. So let's say we come up with, well, we could eke out 20,000 rupees within the next 2 or 3 months. So we order a new palki, nice design. Then it is all finished. Then someone will say, is it very nice? Everyone will say, it's very beautiful. Then someone will say, yes, Krishna's mercy. And mostly everyone will agree, Krishna's mercy. But then someone may think, actually, we calculated that completely within our means. What was our energy at hand, we calculated we can do that. So at which point was it Krishna's mercy? We throw this word around like flower petals in the Pushpanjali ceremony. Krishna's mercy, Kripa. But at which point was it Krishna's mercy? Okay, we think it's Krishna's mercy in the life of devotee, so it may be accepted. But let's say we decide to spend 1 lakh or better. Let's look at it this way. What if we decide to build a palki for $2 million on the top of a mountain in Bangalore? And we only have 400 rupees in our wallet at present. If we succeed in it, then we might say very heartily, oh, Krishna's mercy. Because, meaning, not that his money, his mercy is measured by money, but the point is, we attempt to do something which is beyond our reach. We cannot do that. We are penny poorless. You look in an ashram of 6 dirt poor swamis, and a few householders around who aren't far behind. We're certainly not wealthy. Then, if we try to do something which is beyond our reach, then what is required to do that? Definitely Krishna's mercy is required to do that. Srila Prabhupada used to explain how his Guru Maharaj always kept him in poverty. And he said he would put us in debt, build one temple, and then we would go out to collect for that debt. And when collecting that money, he would take that money and spend it again and double the debt. In this way, it kept us always in debt and working very hard. But if we do always what is within our means, you see, then the tendency is to rely on ourselves. And therefore, reaching that point of complete surrender to Krishna evades us. We rely on our self energy. You try to go beyond your energy. Let us say you're an artist, or say you're a musician. You can sing. Let's say you're talented in producing. A good example was a magazine. Srila Prabhupada told one devotee, old days, so Rai Ram, you start one magazine, it will be called Back to Godhead. This person practically never finished a high school education. He had absolutely no training in journalism and could barely read a newspaper. And Srila Prabhupada put him in the head of a magazine. Then that devotee said, "But Prabhupada, I don't know anything about publishing a magazine." One college professor, I think, he commented, "Barely that boy could read one. Now he's been in charge of managing one." Then Prabhupada told him, No, you simply do. Krishna will help you." So when you do to serve Krishna beyond your means, you can't do it because you don't have the means, the energy, the anything, but you try to do it, then the gap is filled by Krishna. Then we will know Krishna's energy, Krishna's mercy. But always, if we are doing within our means, then, of course, there's such a thing as over-endeavor also. Don't push yourself over the line. So the idea is you don't do in any case. You don't push yourself under the line. You don't push yourself over the line. You let it all come to you from some other agent of the Vaishnava world, from the higher devotees, who you accept as your guru, who you accept as your guardian, who you accept as the Vaishnavas. Let it come down to you. If you create your own program, you may over-endeavor, you may under-endeavor. But don't create your own program. Let it come down to you. If it's under program, then that is necessary for your stage at this time, just to be solid, substantially engaged. And if more comes to you, that may also be just suitable for your stage of advancement. Now the opportunity to step over the big hurdle, come to the life of full surrender. Without the life of full surrender, we cannot go home back to God. The life of full surrender is necessary. Srila Sridhar Maharaj had a little cliche. Mind your own business, surrender. We only have one business in this world. Not painting business, not incense business, not management business, not video business. Only business is surrender. The whole life is meant for this. Come to the point of surrender to Krishna, saranagati. Then our eternal life begins, the life of sweet Krishna. So, if we keep the company of criminally minded people, then we'll become criminally minded. If we associate with selfish and greedy people, we'll become selfish and greedy. If we associate with good stockbrokers, then we'll become a good stockbroker. If we associate with liberated souls, paramahansas, and devotees firmly established on the path of pure devotion, then we will become pure devotees ourselves. And we may come to the position of surrender at this time. Surrender means sacrifice. Without sacrifice, what is the surrender? Throw down your weapons, they say. Throw down your weapons. Put your hands in the air and come out shouting, "Hari Bol, Hari Bol." What are your weapons? So much self-defense. I can stand. Like many times I've told, there's this controversy goes on in the world between men, women, what's the position, all these things. Many times I point out, the position of women is superior to the position of men for spiritual life. Because culturally, they're not supposed to be the boss of the family. They're not supposed to be the boss, be in charge. They're supposed to be in the position of submissive. Then little transference that goes to Krishna, there is perfection. The men on the other side, they have to go up the side of the mountain, straight up, a long way. Oh, I am the man.
Oh, I am the ego. I am the man. I am the... See, it's called Purushabhav. I am the man.
But in front of Krishna, you are not the man.
He is the man.
You are the servant.
The big ego is sitting there. Big ego. But in the cultural position of the lady, they don't have to worry for that.
They're not supposed to have to.
They're already given a position that's very close to spiritual life. So, in this world, there is only one achievement, surrender. There is not an achievement to become equal to men, or men to become equal to women, or back and forth. It becomes a very bewildered world out there, material world. It gets so bewildered, people don't know whether they are men or they are women anymore. They get so bewildered, they don't even know what they are. So, the solution is not to adjust anything of this world. The solution is to adjust ourselves always in relation to the eternal world. We used to say in the early days, long back when I first got acquainted with Krishna consciousness, we called it the KYC days. I belonged to an ashram a long time ago, just before we joined Prabhupada. And so we had this saying that we had a room, it was called the chanting room. So you would be in that room chanting japa. And there were pictures of Krishna on the wall, and you got to pick your favorite picture of Krishna and sit there and chant your japa. So it was understood that generally that the meaning of the Maha Mantra was, "Oh my Lord, please engage me in your service." That was like the meaning, the mood. So then sometimes from the kitchen, the cook, that was usually me, I used to come to the chanting room and call for someone to come and help me in the kitchen for service. So when calling them, then they would say, "No, I'm chanting japa." And they would go back to the chant. So we used to say, "We're praying, oh my Lord, please take me, please engage me in your service, make me yours, take me, I'm yours, take me." And the messenger says, "Come." "All right, prayer answered, please come for some service." "I'm busy praying." The answer comes, but we're busy praying. We should not think the call of service is anything other than the answer to our prayers. Of course, this is what happens in the ashram life. You have those who are always ready for that, and then you have those who are not. Those who will not cooperate with service. Like once when this ashram was being built, we were racing against the monsoons, which was coming in 4 months or whatever, and we were going ahead, so 7 o'clock, it's time to turn up with your claw hammer and your whatever and do service. It's time to move. We got to get going. And then those days there were no classes. But there were some devotees here at that time, and they would refuse to do service until they finished their japa. And it seemed that their japa was never finished. It was all day and night for months and months and months. So, there is a balance. Two things. The holy name and seva, service. These two things are required. Both things are required. Actually, if we take an imbalance, then we will become unhealthy spiritually. We require a regulated amount of chanting of the holy name. And we require service also. Both things. But sometimes there in the ashram life, some devotees will be ready for the call of service at any time, day or night. Then there'll be another section. They're very, very conditional. "No, no, I have to finish this. No, 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 no. No, no, no" is the first thing out of their mouth. Then it becomes an imbalance. And those who are yes, yes first, then they get overwhelmed. And a lot of times then they become frustrated. And it's a practical thing. This is not the spiritual world. We're trying to create a spiritual atmosphere here in the material world. So, for that to happen, then everyone, as much as possible, must be in that proper mood of surrender and service, and understanding that there is no exploitation here. There is only the opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. But if we're not ready for that, then we should take a position in relation to the ashram. Independent living outside. We have many householders and devotees, they live outside. And they do well. Brought here, under the magnifying glass of life in the ashram, they do not do so well. They are not ready for that full 24 hours a day. The pressure is on to surrender to serve relentlessly, selflessly, not cry one word of complaint. That is required.